Stevens' arm, dragging him wordlessly toward a nearby building, a tavern from the sign, silent at this hour but clearly open. Davian struggled in vain, shoulder aching where his arm had been yanked, protesting vigorously. The two other men trailed after them into the dingy building, looking uneasy. The tavern smelled of sweat and stale wine. Only two people were inside, an older man, sweeping, probably the owner, and another younger man in a blue cloak halfway through what looked like breakfast. Davian felt Tanner's grip on his arm tighten. "What is this?" The administrator had stopped eating and stood, studying the scene with a frown as the sweeper halted his work and disappeared silently into the kitchen. The door locked behind him with a firm click.
"He works for the Bleeders,"
Tanner said roughly, a slight slur to his words.
"You going to make trouble?"
Davian locked eyes with the administrator, silently pleading for him to help. The man wavered, then walked over. He reached down and pushed back Davian's left sleeve, revealing clear skin.
"No mark. Not my place," said the blue-cloaked man.
Davian thought he saw something approaching shame in his eyes. The administrator gave a slight nod to Tanner and the two other men, then headed for the door. Davian was watching him go, mouth agape, when the punch took him in the stomach. Air exploded from his lungs, and he went to the floor, wheezing from the blow. A vicious kick followed that clipped him on the chin, snapping his head back, sending his vision spinning and his ears ringing. There was laughter, then shouting, then more blows followed by a confusion of angry voices as he curled up into a ball, his world red and hazy. Then, miraculously, it all stopped. Davian rasped and moaned. There was someone else in the room now, furiously protesting what was happening, though he couldn't lift his head to see who. His arm dangled uselessly at his side, and something, multiple things, in his chest felt broken. As he lay there, though, some of the pain began to just dissipate. He was doing something. Something natural, something he'd done his entire life, but never deliberately. Like a child, recognizing for the first time that they could control their breathing, purposefully drawing in deep lungfuls of air. His head cleared a little.
"This has gone far enough," the new voice was snarling. "Let him go."
Davian forced his gaze up to see a handsome middle-aged man clad in red at the door, bodily restrained by Tanner's two companions. He looked a mixture of furious and terrified. Tanner gestured, not noticing that Davian had recovered enough to observe.
"Too late for that, Bleeder," he said,
words slurred, a wild glee in his eyes.
"You shouldn't have started this. When you came to me, did you know my father was murdered by your people? He did nothing wrong. But the fate's cursed auger said he'd killed someone. They muddied his name and then they hanged him. He cried at the end, you know, begged for mercy. But they didn't give it to him. I even believe that they were telling the truth about him."
His eyes were red-rimmed and he jutted out his jaw, teeth bared.
"And then, 3 years later, we found out that they were all frauds, just making it all up. They were criminals, and all of you who are helping them are just evil. This thing you can do makes you that way. It needs to stop."
The gifted man had paled under the onslaught of drunken words, desperation in his eyes now.
"He's just a boy," he said,
more to the two men holding him than to Tanner.
"Do what you need to do with me, but let him go."
There was silence, and the burly bearded man on the left hesitated, looking like he was about to agree. Then the one on the right started, staring at Davian.
"Tanner," he murmured.
"His arm."
Everyone turned to look at Davian, and the red-cloaked man gasped, suddenly renewing his struggling. It took Davian a second, woozy as he was, to realize why. Tanner had drawn a knife from somewhere on his person. Short, but with a wicked edge, the kind used to gut fish.
It didn't look as if it had been cleaned since its last use. A surge of panic went through Davian as he comprehended the threat, but his shout was cut off by Tanner's massive hand across his mouth. Then the knife was large in his vision, blotting out the rest of the world. The sharp steel started biting into his cheek, slow and deep, tracing a burning line down his face. He bucked, trying to tear himself away, but he may as well have been trying to shrug off a building. Fear and panic and helpless rage all coalesced in his chest, a feral tangle of wild emotions that balled up inside him, tight and hot. Everything dimmed. There was something else there, something dark and powerful and violent. Something that could help. He reached out. The cutting stopped, and Tanner's suffocating grip on him loosened. Davian wrenched himself free and stumbled away before tripping gracelessly, taking great heaving breaths as he collapsed on the dirty wooden floor, vision blurred by tears and blood. When hands failed to grasp at him again, he summoned the courage to lever himself up and twist back toward his assailants, teeth bared in defiance. Tanner hadn't moved to follow him. Instead, his eyes were wide, staring at the blood-stained knife in his hand.
"Tanner?"
The bearded man, still holding the gifted back, looked increasingly anxious.
"What are you doing?"
Slowly, Tanner raised the knife to his own cheek. His hands trembled as they began slicing an unsteady line down his skin. The cut was deep. Blood spilled silently from the wound, gushing onto the collar of his shirt. Everyone else watched in frozen, wide-eyed disbelief.
"Oh, please,"
Tanner whimpered, confusion in his eyes. Then he began to scream, even as he continued to cut. Davian scrambled madly backward with a cry, unable to look away from the horrific sight. Behind Tanner, the other three men, including the gifted, had started to move too. One drew a blade from his belt, the other two fetched knives from the settings at nearby tables. And then they started to cut themselves too, their panicked, pained cries creating a nightmarish chorus with Tanner's.
"Stop!"
Davian screamed, putting his bloodied hands over his ears to blot out their shrieks.
"Just stop!"
An abrupt quiet, almost as shocking as the screams. All four men crumpled to the ground, blades clattering from their hands. Davian stayed scrunched up where he'd collapsed beneath the table, breath coming in short, sharp gasps. His three attackers weren't moving, but the gifted was stirring, dragging himself over to where Davian lay cowering. Blood streamed freely down his face, dark red and glistening. He reached out gently, but Davian couldn't help but flinch away. The gifted swallowed as he forced his hand to Davian's chest.
"I never wanted this. Not this,"
he whispered, as a trickle of healing essence began to flow into Davian, tears of shame in his eyes.
"I'm so sorry."
Everything faded. Davian woke to find the featureless dark stone roof of his cell staring back at him. He gazed at it, steadying his breathing. For so many years, that one day in Kaladel had been nothing but a blur. His mind had shied away from touching it, even his dreams of it nothing more than a hazy melange of events. Since Hrethgar's visit, he had relived it in excruciating detail 5 times now. He knew what was happening, too, that it was more than a simple memory. His ability to see had started taking him back to that moment in his life again and again, just as it happened to Malshash with his wedding day. He rubbed his face and then hauled himself up into a sitting position, swiveling to perch on the side of his small cot. He had killed those men, instinctively controlled them, and then drained too much of their essence. He'd been certain of that since the first time he'd relived it. There was still a lingering horror at the thought. Not guilt, necessarily, but certainly regret. More to the point, though, it meant that Tayris had willingly taken the blame for what Davian had done. Wirid told him that he needed to give Tayris another chance the last time they had spoken. Had he known somehow? And were Tayris's scars, his ongoing cutting of his own face, a result of what Davian had done that day?
Some remnant of the control he'd used? Davian shook his head with a heavy sigh, levering himself to his feet. Tanner's form had been the one he had accidentally taken on when he'd shapeshifted into Dylanus, too. He had thought long and hard about that, suspected he knew what it meant now. It would certainly explain why Malshash had seemed so horrified at the time. There was little point in dwelling on it now, though. It was just another problem for after he got out of here. He began his daily routine, walking the perimeter of his near-empty 20-foot-wide cell to loosen his muscles, then dashing from wall to wall for a few minutes, then a series of strengthening exercises he knew from his memories of Aelric's training. Those drills had been hard the first few months. Now he barely felt a mild burn in his muscles after he finished. Food came next. As it did at the same time every day, the small section in the darkstone walls slid away around dawn, a steel bowl and fresh bucket pushed smoothly through the slot on a rotating shelf before the opening immediately ground shut again. He didn't bother trying to thread Khan through that brief gap anymore. It had taken 6 months for him to gain enough control here to attempt that, only to discover that the meals were delivered through some sort of interconnecting chamber, and that there was a secondary darkstone barrier between him and his guards anyway. That had been disappointing, to say the least. He ate. The food in Tel'Tarthan prison was surprisingly palatable, albeit bland, until the familiar angular symbol etched into the bottom of the dish became fully visible. 13 curling slashes, each joined to another, forming the vague impression of a stylized man. He stared at the image bleakly, then carefully tapped the vessel, draining it of the essence it contained. Just enough to comfortably get him through another day. A deliberate choice by Cassandrid, undoubtedly. He left the bowl on the rotating shelf, then swapped the bucket that served as his privy. The shelf would rotate back at some point during the morning. He spent the next 3 hours practicing with Khan. Though Darkstone, the essence-absorbing, Khan-blocking black bedrock of Ilshan Gath-Del-Teth, had interfered with most things he'd tried, there were still several techniques he could attempt to perfect. Besides, the difficulty of merely grasping the power here in Talangol had forced him to improve. There was no way for him to measure how far he'd come, but he was undoubtedly stronger than he had ever been before. That hadn't mattered so far, but still, he was determined to be ready when the opportunity to get out of here finally presented itself. He was halfway through testing a new variant of his disruption shield when he caught the slight scratching of a key sliding into a lock. He froze, for a split second unwilling to trust his ears. Excluding Hrethgar's intrusions, he had been visited exactly 3 times since his capture. 3 times in a year. Then he swiveled smoothly, tensed, readying his attack. The door began to swing open. Davian stepped outside of time, arrowing multiple whisper-thin threads of Khan through the new crack in his darkstone cage, extending his senses along with them. Some of those threads would drain essence, others would attempt control, others would merely stun. All he needed was to get one through. One. As they reached the door, they were met with a torrent. Hundreds of strands of dark energy flooded into the cell, meeting Davian's and overwhelming them before slithering on unimpeded. Davian watched in horror as they coalesced. A moment later, thick, oily black chains burst into existence, snaking around him before he could react. He gasped as the links snapped tight, lifting him from the floor and slamming him bodily against the wall opposite the cell's entrance. When his head had cleared enough for him to look up again, a muscular, blonde-haired figure stood in the doorway, the end of the black chain attached to a glowing steel bracer on his arm. The man studied him with glazed, lifeless eyes. "A pleasure to see you again, Davian," said Cassandrid. Despite its wanness, Ilshan Gath-Del-Teth's dusk still managed to sting Davian's eyes as he stepped out of Tel'Tarthan prison for the first time in a year. He winced, squinting against the glare, trying instinctively to bring his hands up to shade his eyes. They were firmly bound, though, rough rope chafing against his wrists. He reached for Khan and immediately ground his teeth against the pain that shot through his mind, barely avoiding dropping to his knees again. The same as when those Khan-blocking black chains had still been wrapped around him back in his cell. Beside him, Gassandrid, the man who had given his life to be part of Gassandrid anyway, gave him a gentle nudge forward.
"It is temporary," he assured Davian.
Davian didn't respond, still unsettled by the man's glassy eyes and slightly off, stiff way of moving. He was a corpse, animated by essence and distantly controlled by Gassandrid, who, by his own admission, managed 13 such proxies at any one time. They allowed him to split his mind across multiple bodies, duplicate important knowledge, be in several places at once. These bodies weren't like Davian's, though. They didn't require food or sleep and lasted for only a few months before Gassandrid had to find new ones. All were supposedly volunteers from within the city, as if that somehow made it better. Gassandrid had explained the necessity of it all in calm, unapologetic detail to Davian the first time they had met.
"Where are you taking me?"
asked Davian, as Gassandrid began guiding him down the street, tension tightening his words.
"And why now?"
Gassandrid eyed him.
"Do you think our patience with you would be unending? After all we have shown you, after explaining the situation so clearly, treating you with respect, giving you plenty of opportunity to dwell upon the things you've learned, you still choose to fight for the other side."
"You've treated me with respect?" repeated Davian bitterly. "Are we pretending Hrethgar's visits didn't happen now?" Cassandra's mouth twisted in displeasure.
"As I have said before, that was a mistake.
A mistake that tortured me for 2 straight days and nearly killed me."
Davian's stomach twisted at the memory.
"I'd go as far as to call that a large mistake."
Gassandrid grunted.
"Your point is made, Davian. It does not change anything, so now, given your refusal to change and a lack of better options, you will be put to better use."
Davian just shook his head, falling silent as he processed the ominous words. Gassandrid was right about one thing. The Venerate, specifically Gassandrid and Diara, had explained their position to him. In those first days after freeing Caden, Davian had barely slept as he'd braced himself for reprisals, picturing the sort of agonizing torture to which he'd seen his friend subjected. Instead, when the two Venerate had finally visited him in his cell, everything had been surprisingly civil. He could tell from the icy hatred in her eyes that Diara would have liked nothing more than to do to him all the things he'd been imagining. And yet she had simply tried to read him, unsuccessfully, thanks to Malshash's training, while Gassandrid went about detailing their perspective on things, telling him how Shemaloth's grand plan was currently enslaving the world, about their efforts to help El escape and Caden's desire to prevent that from happening, making special mention, of course, of Caden's goal being to kill each and every person able to access Khan. Davian hadn't believed a word of it that first time.
"He is not coming, you know,"
said Gassandrid suddenly, interrupting Davian's thoughts.
"Not until he needs you."
Davian clenched his jaw, keeping his eyes forward. Ilshan Gath-Delteth was as black and brooding as he remembered it, the darkstone buildings all jagged and angular, as if every element of the architecture was meant to evoke some sort of weapon. The people, normal enough though they seemed, scrambled out of the way with wide-eyed reverence when they spotted Gassandrid.
"I don't know what you're talking about," Davian said eventually.
"Yes, you do." Gassandrid looked across at him. "I can see you still anticipating it, still waiting for something to happen, even after what we showed you. But he has abandoned you, just as he abandoned us. He has no care for people, Davian. To him, only his goals matter.
Davian scowled, the accusation striking home. 1 year. He'd been carefully tracking the passage of time, and he was confident it had been that long. 1 year and no sign of Caden. No contact, no evidence at all that his friend was working to get him out, as he had promised in those desperate moments before his bizarre, nightmarish escape. Even now, even after everything Davian had learned, it was hard to believe that what he'd done had actually set Caden free. He certainly hadn't believed it when Caden's head had rolled to a stop at his feet, lifeless eyes staring accusingly at him. After Cassandra and Diara's second visit to his cell, though, he'd known it to be true. That had been about 2 months after their first conversation, but there had been no talking this time. Instead, he had felt images pouring into his mind almost as soon as the two Venerate entered the room. With his shields focused on stopping information from leaving his mind rather than entering it, there had been little he could do to prevent the onslaught of memories. Visions of Caden as Talcamar, as Arkhine Devade. Memories of the lengths he had gone to and the atrocities he had perpetrated in pursuit of his goals. Of the millions he had sentenced to death because of what he believed, often to the horror of even the other Venerate. And then, after what felt like uninterrupted hours of forced experience, a final memory, not originating from Cassandrid or Diara this time, but from Caden himself. Something Caden had shared with the others in an attempt to uncover the identity of the man he had killed, rattled as he had been by the stranger's words and desperate as he was to prove him a liar. That memory, above all, Davian had done everything he could to forget. It was no easy thing to watch your own death. He shuddered, forcing down the sense of helplessness that always accompanied these images. It had, unsurprisingly, badly shaken him. For weeks after, he had sat in that lonely cell and just wondered. Not about which side he was on. The Venerate had tried to destroy Andara and kill everyone he loved, so there was no debating that. But he had started to doubt his choices. Freeing his friend, supporting him, believing in him as he had. If Caden got his memories back, started reverting to who he had once been, he sucked in a breath. Ultimately, he'd come to the conclusion that he had a simple choice. Have faith in the man he had come to know, or condemn him for a past that Caden himself had tried to reject. And if Davian chose the latter, all the things he had said to Caden, the advice he'd given, the assurances of friendship he'd made, had been nothing more than words. Which was why he was able to meet Cassandra's gaze with confidence this time.
"That's not the Caden I know," he replied quietly. "If he's not coming, then he's not coming. But it isn't because he doesn't want to."
Cassandra watched him, then dipped his head.
"I cannot help but admire your faith in Talcamar, even if I think it is misplaced," he said sincerely. "Perhaps it is part of why you were able to sway him when so many before you could not." There was no talk for a while after that. People began to flow around them as their downward-sloping street merged with a main road, which in turn ended in a massive marketplace to the east. Several more passers-by stuttered to a stop and gawked as they recognized Cassandra's proxy, his passage leaving a trail of hushed, excited murmurs. Davian's presence, despite his bonds and the runner's mark clearly cut into his neck, was by comparison barely acknowledged. He gazed around as they walked, a little intimidated by the crowds after having been isolated for so long. The sun had fully slipped below the horizon now, and torches were being lit at regular intervals along the streets, which, like everything else in the city, were carved from dark stone. The sharp black lines of the buildings stood out starkly against the fading light in the west. Despite its alien appearance, everything else here truly seemed normal,
Merchants hawked wares in the distance. People chattered and laughed and shouted and bustled from place to place, going about their business at the end of the day. Children trailed after parents. The sounds of singing filtered out of a nearby tavern. The rhythm of the song felt strange, not quite right, but otherwise this could have been any city in Andara. As they walked, Cassandra abruptly dug into a pocket, pulling out something small and holding it up for Davian to see.
"I have to ask. My curiosity has been piqued for some time. How exactly did you obtain something so valuable?"
Davian stared at the silver ring, nonplussed. His mind raced. The familiar three intertwining strands were unmistakable. It was the vessel Asha had given him, the one Malshash had used to draw him through time in Dylanis, the one he had been wearing when he'd been captured a year earlier. But Cassandra's question felt off. The vessel was useful, but hardly remarkable. The ring itself was finely made, but far from singular in its craftsmanship. Why would Cassandra, of all people, describe it as valuable? He held his tongue. The silence drew out, and Cassandra gave a snort of disgust, pocketing the vessel again and marching onward. They finally made their way into a large square. Davian recognized it immediately, the enormous sphere that dominated its center, blue essence pulsing through cracks that spiderwebbed across it was a landmark he had noted when he and Fessy had first been brought here. The thought gave him a flicker of sadness, an echo of the grief he'd felt a year ago. Fessy was dead now. Her death had been confirmed by Cassandrid, and the man had shared his memory of examining her torn body as proof. She'd fled into a section of the city called Seclusion, apparently, an area dangerous even for the Venerate, if Cassandrid was to be believed. That news had shaken Davian, left him feeling empty and alone in a way nothing else had during his imprisonment. Not only had Fessy been his friend, but the thought of her out there, escaping, maybe even getting help, had been one of the few bright lights of those early days. In the time since, Davian had guessed that she must have run because she'd recognized something from one of her visions, likely the one of her own death, given the timing and how scared she had been. He'd never know for sure, though. He frowned as he and Cassandra approached a large, dark stone archway at the side of the square, beyond which lay stairs that vanished down into the bowels of the city. A trickle of people were entering, talking excitedly among themselves. Cassandra nodded for Davian to proceed, and they joined the downward flow. Voices echoed in the tunnel as the sounds of the square began to fade behind them. The people up ahead were talking enthusiastically about someone called Mataniel. Though his expression gave away little, Davian thought he saw a flicker of irritation in Cassandra's eyes at the repeated mentions of the name. They continued their descent for several minutes until the comparative quiet of the passageway was gradually covered over by a low rumble, the muttering sounds of a crowd barely audible. After another minute, that had grown to a dull roar, crescendoing and dampening and then crescendoing again as thousands of voices thundered. Davian's heart began to pound with the pulsating noise as he finally saw the way ahead smooth out and open up. He stepped off the last stair, stomach lurching at the sight before him. They had emerged onto a pathway, high above a massive bowl-shaped cavern, the entire space clearly carved from the surrounding darkstone. Row upon row of staggered seating had been hewn into its sides, interspersed with carefully cut stairways. The seating ran all the way to the bottom, which leveled out to form a rectangular arena, though that too was floored by darkstone, this surface worn smooth, but with its immediate walls ugly and jagged, viciously sharp protrusions everywhere. Those spikes would prevent anyone in the arena itself from climbing out, and from the wine-colored viscous liquid dripping from some of them, Davian suspected that they had been tested quite recently. The benches were three-quarters filled with people, a massive crowd, though most weren't sitting. Animal-like screams and wild-eyed jeers came from every direction at the arena far below, which currently held a half-dozen occupants. Even from this height, Davian could see the tension in those fighters' shoulders, the sweat glistening on their faces as they circled and slashed wearily with their weapons. Scattered across the arena were several more people. Each of them was prone and still. Bile rose in Davian's throat as he understood what he was seeing. He stuttered to a halt, his attention more on the crowd than the combatants. There was something feral in their expressions, a fierce, lusting glee that exploded every time someone down in the center drew blood.
Why are we here?
He asked Cassandra, voice barely more than a whisper. Cassandra didn't answer, moving to the side and unlocking a thick iron gate, quickly ushering Davian through and locking it again before anyone passing had a chance to notice. They walked along an elevated pathway. Many of those in the highest seats spotted their passage, cheering and taunting them in equal measure, though their distraction from the bloodshed below was brief. Davian put one foot after another in a daze. He had heard of such things, contests of blood, men and women fighting to the death for the entertainment of others. Supposedly a staple in Nesk, the Isles of Kalandra, and other far-off barbaric realms. Certainly nothing he'd ever expected to see in person. They came to another set of stairs and started down again, away from the seething cauldron, the frenzied crashing noise of the crowd soon muted by thick dark stone walls.
"You expect me to fight?" said Davian, voice unsteady.
Cassandra pulled him to a stop as they reached the bottom of the stairs and came to a heavy-looking iron door. He looked Davian in the eye.
"I expect you to win," he said softly.
He rapped on the door. Before Davian could respond, a heavy lock clicked and the door swung open, revealing a pretty young woman with short-cropped brown hair, fine features, and pale skin waiting warily on the other side. She examined Davian coolly, one hand on the hilt of her blade. Aside from the absence of a helmet, she was clad entirely in the black, light-drinking armor of Telestacia. Her entire demeanor changed, and she dropped to one knee when she spotted Cassandra's proxy.
"Lord Cassandra," she said reverently, head bowed. "My name is Isaire. In the Protector's name, welcome."
Cassandra bent down and pulled the woman gently to her feet.
"There is no need to kneel, Isaire. Not to me."
He gave Davian, whose head ached as he tried to process what was happening, a small push forward.
"I have today's challenger for you."
Isaire's expression clouded with sudden confusion.
"Lord Alaris' chosen fighter
will not be required today." Cassandra's voice was firm. "This man is to be announced as Ithemial. Keep a close watch on him, and if anything seems out of place, do not hesitate to bring him back to me, even at the cost of delaying the proceedings."
Isaire still looked surprised, but obviously knew not to argue. She bowed low. The proxy gave a nod of satisfaction and disappeared back up the stairwell.
"Lord Cassandra is confident," observed Isaire, casually drawing her blade and slicing through Davian's bonds before poking at him to move through the doorway. "Ithemial, destroyer of false idols. He must have great faith in your abilities to publicly name you so."
Davian barely heard the words, thoughts racing as he allowed himself to be moved along. Though Isaire acted casually, Davian could see that every movement was balanced, every glance alert. She looked comfortable in Telestacia, too. He reached out for Khan, stumbling as pain ricocheted through his head. Not as crippling as before, but he still couldn't touch the power. Even with Cassandra gone, there was no way to escape just yet.
"I have seen Metaniel fight," continued Isaire,
despite Davian's obvious lack of interest in the conversation. She looked him over with an assessing, dubious glance.
"Lord Cassandra clearly knows something that I do not."
Davian remained taciturn as the oppressively narrow passageway branched in five different directions. His guard ushered him into the leftmost one, and they were soon emerging into a large chamber which was empty save for several racks of battered-looking weapons and armor lining the walls. Smoke from torches mingled with the acrid smell of sweat and blood. "Miss Metaniel," said Davian finally, staring at the blades. "That's who I'm about to face." Isaire gave him a baffled look.
"You haven't heard of him?"
The woman seemed incredulous when Davian shook his head.
"Where have you been for the past half a year?"
"Teltarthan prison." Isaire started to smile, though the expression faded to something more thoughtful as she realized that he wasn't joking.
"Metaniel started fighting in the arena 6 months ago. His skills have made him very popular, and he has a reputation, justified so far, of being unbeatable. He has also been a somewhat divisive figure."
Isaire hesitated, as if debating how much to say.
"Outside of the arena, he has spoken out against the preparations for war, challenged people not to blindly hate the South, criticized the Venerate, and questioned their motives. He claims knowledge of their secrets, too. We'll tell anyone who listens of the atrocities he believes they commit against the people of this city. He has stirred up more dissent here than anyone in recent memory."
Davian's heart sank. So not only was he being forced to fight, but it was against an enemy of the Venerate.
"Why don't they just kill him?" he asked eventually, walking over to the rack of swords.
These blades were dented, and he could see where blood had soaked into many of the hilts. Davian picked one up and hefted it with a grimace. It was unbalanced, poorly made. Isaire shrugged.
"Martyrs are powerful things. If he does not die in the arena, everyone will know why and assume that what he says is true."
She studied him.
"As I said, if you are being pitted against him, then Lord Gassandred evidently knows something I do not."
Davian tried another sword, Aelric's memories telling him that the craftsmanship was as lacking as that of the first. He'd already decided not to wear any of the armor on offer. Even if the quality was significantly better than that of these blades, he wasn't accustomed to it, and it would only serve to slow him down.
"Then he has made a mistake. If Metaniel is an opponent of the Venerate, I'll make sure that I don't kill him. Defeat in the arena means death, regardless of whether the final blow comes during the fight or after it is over. And if you each refuse to fight, then you will simply both be executed."
There was certainty in Isaire's voice.
"If you truly do not wish to kill him, then you will need to sacrifice yourself."
Davian fell silent, thinking furiously. There had to be a way out of this.
"Why are you telling me all of this?" he asked suddenly.
He stopped, examining his guard, the faintest flicker of hope igniting in his chest.
You don't want me to fight him. You believe in what Metaniel says, don't you?"
Isaire looked at him.
"I am giving you information that is already common knowledge. Nothing more."
There was a familiar stabbing pain in Davian's head. His pulse quickened.
"I know you are lying. You could get me out of here," he pressed.
The lingering effect of the black chains, or possibly telesthesia, must be affecting his ability similarly to a mental shield.
"We are on the same side. You saw my bindings when I got here. I am no friend to the Venerate."
To his surprise, Isaire just laughed, the sound musical and without malice.
"I would never betray Lord Gassandred."
More pain.
"Besides, even if you were right, it would not matter. Willing or not, you will be dead within the hour."
The latter statement was apparently not a lie, as far as Isaire was concerned. Davian's lip curled, but he quickly reined in his frustration.
"What if you're wrong? What if I end up killing the one man who could make a difference in this city?"
He leaned forward, willing her to change her mind.
"You want to know why Gassandred brought me here to fight him? I am an augur, Isaire, and I am not fated to die today," he finished firmly.
The slender woman's eyes widened, and for the first time she looked off balance as she stared at him. There was dead silence for a few seconds.
"That is unexpected," she admitted. "But in some ways that would make things harder still. The Venerate would hunt me to the ends of the earth if I set you free."
"You have to," pleaded Davian. "I can help. This may be the only chance I get. Please." Ysir looked at him, her expression still considering, processing what he had told her. Then she reluctantly shook her head.
"It is too much of a risk. I do want to help you, but there are bigger things than even Metaniel's safety to worry about. I am sorry, and I hope that this somehow works out for you, but I owe you nothing."
Davian opened his mouth to further his case, but was interrupted by the sound of a horn, loud and harsh. His heart dropped as the far door opened, flooding the room with bright light, banishing whatever chance he'd thought he had. Ysir was already on her feet, her back straight and her face cold, every inch the elite guard. She nodded to the hulking, silhouetted figure in the entrance, then turned to Davian.
"It's time. Go."
Davian rose slowly, the weight of what felt like a missed opportunity heavy on his shoulders. He couldn't blame her, he knew that. It didn't lessen the pain of having those few moments of desperate hope slip away again so quickly. He hefted the poorly made blade he had chosen and trudged past Ysir, not looking in her direction.
"I am sorry," she whispered as he passed,
her lips barely moving despite the attention of the man in the doorway being back on the crowd. Davian paused, inclined his head in the barest of acknowledgments. For now, it would have to be enough that there were allies here, to know that, just maybe, he wasn't completely alone in this nightmare. He squared his shoulders, then walked out of the tunnel and into the thundering, drumming, pulsing roar of the arena. Chapter 4 Davian waited at the lowest level of the Blackstone Amphitheater, body tensed against the bone-rattling sound that assaulted him from all sides, only dull metal bars now between him and the violence taking place beyond. Both the gate and the passageway he was standing in were capped by thick darkstone, completely in shadow and out of sight of the crowd above. Davian could hear them well enough, though. Stamping feet drummed chaos above his head. 1,000 voices screamed their delight or anger as events in the center unfolded, thundering waves of emotion followed by troughs of jeering or support or anything in between. Every moment of it made Davian sick. He glanced across at the hulking man who had fetched him from his conversation with Ysir and was now standing beside him, peering through the bars in fascination. Telesthesia rippled black around his body, dark even in the shadows. All the guards here wore it, apparently. "How long until it's over?" The huge man turned. Even the muscles in his thick neck stood out. He considered Davian with sharp, appraising green eyes. "A minute until you're out there. 2 at most." He eyed Davian's attire disapprovingly. "And maybe 30 more seconds until you are dead. Pride will get you killed, runner," he added gruffly, returning to his watching through the bars. Davian didn't respond, turning back to the battle out in the center as he thought furiously of ways that he might still get out of this. The guard hadn't been wrong. The fight currently underway was nearly over. One combatant was still defending, but his movements were sluggish, desperate in their jerkiness. Whether he had been wounded or was dizzy from a blow to the head, it barely mattered. His opponent had the advantage and knew it, raining down blow after blow in what was close to a frenzy, not with any particular skill, but rather with sheer heavy force. A thin spray of glittering red suddenly colored the torch-lit air. A roar echoed around the arena as the wounded man crumpled. The other dropped to his knees and stabbed down with feverish intensity several times as the feral cheers of the crowd urged him on, before finally rocking back and lifting his bloodied blade, looking at the stone ceiling far above and screaming his relief to the enthusiastic onlookers.
Protector, take it, muttered the man to Davian's side, flicking the bars in front of him in irritation at what Davian assumed was a lost wager. Davian watched silently as the victor was ushered away and the loser's corpse dragged unceremoniously from the arena. This violence was awful, barbaric, but he had seen far worse over the past few years. Such things didn't shock him as they once would have. That worried him sometimes. The crowd's fervor quieted to a low, dull roar, equal parts anticipation and restlessness. Davian closed his eyes, taking deep breaths and focusing on a series of mental techniques designed to block out emotional distractions. It was another routine inherited from Aelric, one of the memories the brilliant young swordsman had allowed Davian to read from him before their defense against the blind, what seemed like an age ago now. He knew he was going to need everything he'd taken from Aelric. Diligent though he'd been in his exercises over the past year, doing them in a locked room and without an actual weapon was hardly a suitable replacement for proper training. Not to mention that, if what Isser had said was even vaguely accurate, then his opponent was both practiced and very, very good. And as little as Davian wanted to fight, he had no intention of dying tonight. He took another calming breath, then hesitantly reached for Khan once again. Fire scorched through his mind. He gritted his teeth, clawing desperately through the haze of red toward the dark energy that he knew lay just beyond. There was resistance, like being underwater and swimming for the surface. And then abruptly, a bursting of the pressure. He was through. Davian opened his eyes again, not releasing his grip on Khan, relief mingling with a tingle running down his spine at the sudden tension in the air. How long had he been focusing? An aura of pent-up expectation filled the stadium. The crowd above had to be at least 5,000 strong now, packed in so that they were almost spilling over the balconies above. Whether that was normal, or if people were expecting something special tonight, he had no idea. Suddenly, the way ahead was opening.
Protector with you, runner, muttered the guard as he prodded Davian through.
Davian half stumbled out onto the black barren stone, the worn smooth surface stretching away in front of him for at least 200 feet. Iron clanged behind him as the barred gates slammed shut again, the sound barely audible over the exulting bellows of the crowd. Davian stood still for a moment, feeling the uneven weight of the steel in his hand, quickly trying to take in what else was happening around him. It didn't take long to realize that this would not be a simple duel. The gates to either side of him, perhaps 30 feet away to his left and right, had also opened, three fighters clad in telesthesia emerging from each and barely pausing before arrowing toward him. On the far side of the arena he could see more motion. A single figure directly opposite, and another half-dozen opponents streaming in its direction, too. Assuming that other figure was Metaniel, the fight was being kept even. That was something. He took another deep, calming breath as the black-armored combatants, four men and two women, flew toward him, preternaturally fast. His heart pounded as he took the measure of the blurring dark forms. Davian waited until the closest of his attackers was less than 10 feet away and stepped outside of time. Even already holding it as he was, Khan was difficult to wield here in Talon Ghul, thin and oily, and commanding a good deal of his concentration to use. Still, a year of constant practice had helped. The noise of the crowd was suddenly a little quieter, distorted, as if you were hearing it through a long and echoing tunnel. The people in the stands were still moving, but at half their previous pace, mouths opening and shutting sluggishly, clenched fists seeming to wave almost lazily above their heads. To either side of Davian, the men and women in telesthesia came more sharply into view. Not slower than him, that was too much to hope for, but close to the same speed now. A spear flicked out like a forked tongue from the frontmost fighter's hand. Davian moved smoothly to the side, letting the wicked edge pass beneath his left armpit, and then spinning, wrenching the weapon from the shocked man's hands. An undisciplined attack, despite the telesthesia. The man, another runner, interestingly, judging from the symbol burned into his neck, must have thought to score a quick kill and gain the resulting glory all for himself. Davian maintained his grip on the plain wooden haft and continued his twirling motion, snapping the spear around and slashing hard. Like all the fighters racing at him, the attacker wore no helmet. The sharp steel reeked deep in a diagonal line down the stunned man's right cheek, then across his throat. He went down in a gurgling shower of blood. Davian didn't pause to watch. He could wield a spear well enough, but it wasn't his preference. He braced, and the weapon blurred as it left his hands, sprouting through the open mouth of the next attacker, who flipped backward at the force of the throw, dead before she hit the ground. Four left. They stuttered to a brief, shocked halt, but quickly recovered, spreading out, working together now. More respectful of him than the first man. One barked an instruction to the others, the exact words lost to Davian beneath the pulsating thrum of the crowd. His assailants began to separate further, circling him, hunting for a blind spot. Davian snatched some essence from a nearby torch and flicked it at the fighter to his left, eliciting an appreciative gasp from the crowd as the red-bearded man flinched. Telesthesia would block the energy, of course, but most people still shied away when a blinding bolt of it was fired at their face. Davian simultaneously dove to his left, just past the singing blade of another attacker, his elbow smashing a third in the nose with a wet crunch before he got in close and grappled for their weapon. The sudden, searing pain in his side warned him that the fourth fighter had scored a hit. Davian ignored the sensation and the subsequent temptation to panic, instead driving his elbow viciously back again, rewarded with a muted cry of pain as he wrested the contested sword free from the athletic-looking young man's grasp. He staggered back, with the second blade now held in his left hand, still on guard, doing his best not to let on that there was a fiery numbness creeping up his side. The injury was a bad one, possibly life-threatening for anyone unable to heal themselves. Maybe still was. He forced essence from his dangerously low artificial reserve to the wound. With the nearby torch out and his opponents in telesthesia, there were no other resources at hand. But while the pain eased, it did not vanish. He growled in frustration as the sliced open cloth of his tunic slapped wetly against his skin, the heavily stained fabric no doubt displaying to everyone his weakness. The flow of blood had been staunched, but he hadn't been able to heal himself enough to regain full mobility. Even taking into account the now disarmed fighter who was wiping blood from beneath his broken nose but otherwise looking alert again, Davian's task had become near impossible. He tensed, preparing to launch himself at the nearest of his opponents. He would have to trust to the added advantage of the extra weapon and fate. He couldn't afford to wait for an opening. He faltered. Beyond his assailants, toward the center of the arena, there was movement. His heart sank. There hadn't been enough time for Metaniel to overcome the telesthesia-clad fighters on the other side, which meant that he must have instead succumbed quickly. Davian would soon be fighting even greater numbers. He let his gaze slip past his attackers to focus on the lone black-clad figure flying toward them, and froze. The thin, long-limbed fighter was wearing a telesthesia helmet to go along with the rest of his armor. Davian's shock almost cost him. The woman to his right had seen his hesitation and lashed out with her sword. He jerked back, barely keeping his balance, the blade slicing perilously close to where his right arm had just been. The woman shouted in triumph as she saw the opening, darting forward. Her head rolled from her shoulders in a spray of red as Metaniel's sword slashed from behind. Davian scrambled to set his guard again, but Metaniel was already moving on, past him, close enough to strike at, had Davian been fast enough. There was a clash of steel. Davian spun, dazed, to find the man whose nose he had broken slumping to the ground with thick red dribbling from his gaping throat, while the next fighter's sword was already cartwheeling through the air. Metaniel moved with grace and purpose, elegance, somehow looking unhurried despite the terrifyingly cold efficiency with which he put his blade to work. He slid to one side. The third fighter went down screaming, blinded as steel sliced cleanly across his eyes. The final of Davian's original foes attacked. Metaniel simply stepped underneath the blow and caught the man's arm as it descended, then thrust forward with clinical force, the tip of his viscera-coated blade abruptly protruding from the back of his opponent's skull.
Nathaniel withdrew the blade instantly, spinning back to the writhing man on the ground, and going smoothly to one knee, silencing the fighter's agonized cries with a single, icily efficient blow. Davian could only watch, barely able to believe what he was seeing. 5 seconds. That was how long this man had taken to kill 4 opponents in Telesthesia. He forced himself to snap back into action, putting distance between himself and Nathaniel's tall, wiry frame even as he registered the half-dozen prone forms on the other side of the arena. It wasn't that Nathaniel had somehow evaded his own attackers then. He had simply dealt with them that quickly. Davian gripped his dual blades firmly, mouth dry as the warrior in front of him stood again, smoothly withdrawing his sword from the dead man's skull. He faced Davian, and that symbol, the same symbol that had been carved into the side of Davian's neck a year ago, stared back like a giant, deformed eye. The crowd had gone quiet. Davian could make out that much even from inside the time bubble. Whether they were sharing in his shock at Nathaniel's inhuman efficiency, or simply anticipating what was about to happen, he had no idea. He couldn't afford to look, couldn't afford to take his eyes off the man in front of him. Nathaniel simply stared at Davian, motionless, almost casual in his stance, clearly confident, and with what felt like good reason. Davian shifted his weight onto the balls of his feet, muscles bunching as he prepared to launch himself forward. His injury was not going to improve any further. Waiting in this weakened state was the worst thing he could do, no matter how good his opponent. Left hand by his waist, Nathaniel flicked 3 fingers at the ground. Davian blinked, hesitated. That motion had been small, almost imperceptible, so fast that Davian wondered whether he'd imagined it. Outside of his time bubble, there was no way he would have seen it at all. Even so, it was enough to fire a memory, one he knew was not his own. His heart pounded loud in his ears, confusion suddenly making Khan even harder to hold on to. The gesture was one that Unguin, Aelric's mentor, had used. A message between swordsmen, though usually ones who were on the same side, working together to take on a common foe. Wait. Davian's breath was heavy. Though his actual exertion had been brief, his wound had taken too much out of him. He knew, logically, that he had to win here, was destined to win no matter the choice he made now. But in his condition, against this man, he simply could not see how that was possible. He made his decision, forced his muscles to ease, then cautiously took a step back, putting distance between himself and Nathaniel. Davian's faceless opponent immediately drew a secondary, shorter sword from his belt. Davian tensed again, suddenly certain he had made a mistake. Nathaniel raised the blade to his own shoulder. A thrill ran through the stadium as he carefully cut away the leather bindings of his Telesthesia breastplate, then shrugged it off and threw it to the side. The crowd, like Davian, thought they knew what was happening. Nathaniel was removing his armor as a statement, a challenge, a way of matching Davian's own lack. It wasn't until a few seconds later that Davian saw what no one else possibly could. Nathaniel's hands were trembling. The shaking became more pronounced as the warrior's short sword came up again. This time, though, the crowd's murmurs turned to a hushed confusion, almost as complete as Davian's. Both of Nathaniel's hands were on the hilt, but gripping it upside down, the blade pointing toward the ground. For a moment, everything paused. Nathaniel's head tilted up slightly, and Davian thought he gave the slightest of nods in his direction. Then the blade snapped inward, the tip at Nathaniel's chest. Before anyone could react, the warrior was driving the steel hard and deep into his own flesh. Davian lowered his bloodied dual blades until they hung limply at his sides, a symbol of his utter disbelieving bewilderment as he watched Nathaniel crumple to the ground. He let his time bubble drop, gaze drifting dazedly to the thousands of faces staring back at him from the crowd. Had someone intervened on his behalf? Controlled Nathaniel somehow? But no, that was impossible. Telesthesia should have blocked any attempt to reach the man's mind with Khan. Confused, concerned shouts started raining down from the onlookers above. This wasn't what they had come here to see. There was motion around the edges of the arena as guards behind the various gates peered uncertainly through the bars, knowing they were meant to collect the victor once the fight was finished, but evidently perplexed and probably alarmed by what they had just witnessed. Davian finally moved, gripping his two swords alertly again as he limped forward, face contorting at the pain in his side. His caution was unnecessary. Matanuel was dead, his chest still, even as dark blood continued to spill from his self-inflicted wound. Davian finally dropped his blades, kneeling next to the body and placing his hands on Matanuel's helmet. The indignant buzz of the crowd swelled as they saw what he was about to do, though presumably more because they realized that it meant Matanuel was truly dead than because they didn't want Davian touching him. Perhaps 50 feet away, one of the gates to the arena was finally swinging open, and a dozen men emerged, bearing a heavy chain over their shoulders. The metal of it was black, oily in the torchlight. Davian recognized it immediately. The first boos began to rain down as Davian hurriedly began wrestling Matanuel's helmet from his head, certain he would not get another chance once the guards reached him. The fastenings were tight, and adrenaline made his hands shake as he worked feverishly, all too aware of the men now running toward him, yelling in taut voices for him to stop, to get away from the body and to lie on the ground so that they could secure him. Just as hands began looping under his armpits to fling him to the ground, the black covering finally slid away to reveal Matanuel's face. A man not much older than Davian, brown-haired and clean-shaven, hazel eyes staring sightlessly at the dark stone roof. A stranger. Davian was quite certain he had never laid eyes on him before. Then he was on his stomach, the wind knocked out of him, and knees pressing hard into his back as the Telesthesia-armored men began rapidly looping the black chain around him, pinning his arms to his sides. He didn't resist beyond trying to protect his aching side. Whatever was going on, he was in no condition to put up more of a fight. He couldn't see much with his face pressed into the dark stone, but the booing around them had intensified to an ugly, heavy drone, and flecks of motion behind the men holding him down suggested that the crowd were now flinging things onto the arena in protest. The chains around him seemed to tighten and slither together, pulsing with darkness as they did so. Davian winced at the renewed pain of his wound, but made certain not to move otherwise, not wishing to show these men any signs of resistance. From their panicked sideways glances at him, it would clearly not take much to invite further violence. As soon as his captors were satisfied that the bindings had taken hold, he was being hauled to his feet and half-carried, half-dragged toward the nearest gate. He was surrounded by Telesthesia, still couldn't see a lot, but several of the men flinched as they neared the edge of the arena, and the sounds of ill-aimed projectiles striking rock were obvious even over the continued snarl of the crowd. Then, finally, they were past the iron bars and hurrying down the shadowed passageway. The petulant, impotent railing of Ilshan Gathdel Teth's citizens chased them into the darkness. Chapter 5. Asha reclined on the couch in front of the tall, narrow arch of glass, soaking up the pleasant late-morning sun as she flipped the page. She paused in her study, gazing out the roof-to-ceiling window next to her, one of the many that lined the wood-paneled walls of the massive library. Beyond, sunlight glittered off rippling streams, hues spinning through fountains as bursts of water rhythmically showered the air in a spectacular dance of motion. The gently sloping grounds were alive with such displays, interspersed with vibrant green manicured lawns and brilliant white stone pathways. In the distance, past the immediate grounds at the beginning of the valley, a lush forest swayed gently in what was no doubt a pleasantly warm breeze. She stretched, turning back to the book. Her breath caught. There it was again. It had happened twice since she'd settled down here an hour ago, a flicker of dark movement in the corner of her eye, something flitting along the dappled tree line below. She swiveled, eyes darting as she searched unsuccessfully for the source of her concern. Was it just the motion of the fountains? A mild paranoia? She shifted restlessly and tried to resume her reading. After a few seconds, though, she sighed, snapping the book shut and pushing it to the side. Even one moment out of place here was unusual. It could have been her imagination, but ignoring it would be foolish. She checked her reserve absently, though there was little need. The great ocean of essence thrummed there as always, pulsing so bright that she had learned to ignore it out of necessity. She adjusted the summery yellow dress she was wearing and made her way out onto the nearest balcony, sweeping back her loose hair as the soft wind nudged it across her face. As always out here, the temperature was perfect. The sun was warm, but the breeze took away its edge and kept the air invigoratingly fresh. Asha started down the winding stairs between and sometimes beneath the streams and fountains that created the constant joyful dance around her. Short tunnels made of crystal and glass wound through the water, casting a gentle, softly shifting deep blue on the white stone underfoot as the sun filtered through the clear pools. About halfway down, she tarried, turning to gaze back up at the palace. It was a beacon through the bursts of water, the crystal facade glittering and refracting light in every direction for miles. Bright, but not enough to be blinding, not enough that she had any desire to look away. It did that all day, and any night when there was even a sliver of moon. It still felt strange to think of it as her home. She tore herself from the dazzling sight and continued down the hill, breathing deeply as a light mist from one of the fountains wafted across her face, pleasantly refreshing. Before long, she had reached the bottom, the edge of the grounds giving way to the dappled light of the forest ahead. With the tinkling of water now behind her, the warbling of birds tickled cheerfully at her ears, and the soft sigh of wind through the treetops was a comforting susurrus. She wound away along the path, alert for any hint of something unusual, not rushing, there was no need, but not wandering either. After a few minutes, she reached the point where the trail began to close in and the trees grew more closely, threading together in order to block her path. Asha lingered, then shrugged to herself. She'd come this far now. She edged her way through, forcing aside the unnaturally resistant, thickly leafed branches, until she finally broke out onto the open plateau beyond. She brushed herself off, strolling to the edge of the grassy cliff top, and making herself comfortable, legs dangling over the sheer drop as she stared out contemplatively at the blue sky stretching to the horizon and the distant, inaccessible rolling plains below. It was a stunning vista. Perfect. Just like everything else here. She breathed deeply, concentrated. A section beyond the edge of the cliff rippled. And then she was looking at a barrier of writhing, pulsing shadow, the wall that formed the edge of the Dokken now impossibly juxtaposed against the clean light of noon. She swallowed, steadying herself against the dizzying sight and studying the swirling black mass intently. This was the weakest point in the mental construct, the one she had needed to reinforce 3 times so far. It looked stable enough right now, though. Asha chewed her lip, observing the pulsing barrier for a few more moments before looking away, letting the illusion of sun and sky reassert itself. Whatever was going on, this wasn't the problem. She frowned at where the barrier had been, dissatisfied. Her knowledge of how the Dokken worked felt relatively complete. One of her first tasks here had been to read each of the comprehensive books in the library on the subject, after all. But something was off, and this time she couldn't put her finger on what it was. That was a problem. Though she had a semblance of control over the stability of this place, it was Caden's creation, not hers. At least she'd deduced it was, given the tiny pieces she'd gleaned from Ellie. Yet Caden himself seemed to have only the most tenuous of connections to it. If it collapsed, as it so nearly had several times during those first terrifying few weeks here, then at best she would be permanently cast into the constant agony of the tributary. And at worst, her mind would disintegrate along with the Dokken. She shivered at the thought and began heading back to the palace, mentally cataloging the books on the subject that were worth revisiting. She would have to ask Ellie her opinion, too. All she had to do was... The ground trembled, and Asha's heart went to her throat. The midday sun suddenly waned, then flickered, Asha's surroundings disorienting as reality began to spin in and out of darkness. The air rippled all around her, and sounds became warped, the delicate tinkling of the fountains up the hill morphing into something sullen and unsettling. She braced herself, breathing heavily, trying to hold back tears. Not a collapse, but still. There had been a shift only a week ago. It was too soon, too soon. There was a roar, and she was ripped back to there. She forced her eyes open, vision blurring through the tears. She blinked to clear them, unable to move. Searing pain sliced through her body everywhere, forcing her breaths to come in short, panicked gasps. Despite her having been through this a dozen times before, it was worse than she remembered, worse than she could have anticipated. It wasn't just the pain. It was the inability to do anything about it, to feel so helpless, so trapped, while the needle-thin blades cut her everywhere. Outside the tributary, through the pain in front of her face, she could see the pavilion outlined in pulsing blue essence. It was starting to shift, pieces groaning into motion, whirring and rotating and realigning, snapping together with crackles of energy. She didn't know if it always did that, or if it was just during the shifts, but it was at least something to focus on, some small distraction from the pain that tore her concentration apart every few seconds. Beyond the moving parts outside, she was occasionally able to glimpse the world beyond, the cliffside, the ocean, the boundary itself. It was night, clouds masking most of the sky, but the pulsing boundary lit everything from miles around. The strength of that glow gave her the slightest measure of comfort as she struggled against the agony. It was still standing. What she was doing here was worthwhile. Soon enough, her muscles were screaming from the tension of trying to stay perfectly still. Whenever she relaxed them, the slight shift meant that every blade cut savagely, causing those same muscles to tense up again instinctively, which in turn forced the razor-sharp edges running through her back into flesh that had just barely healed. She knew that was how it worked, knew that this was happening to her day in and day out while she was in the Dokken. But inside, it was nothing more than an unpleasant thought. She tried to focus on anything else, a technique from one of the books she had read recently, plans for what she wished to train in next, but nothing could take away from the constant, mind-breaking pain. It went on for what felt like an eternity. Asha woke. She just lay there, barely breathing, still afraid to move. She was lying on her back atop her massive, impossibly soft four-poster bed, tucked carefully underneath the covers. The sun was setting through the enormous and intricately designed open window that formed the entirety of the western wall of the room. A silhouetted flock of birds glided in front of light clouds tinged pink and orange, and the essence lights, beneath the fountains outside, were beginning to pulse to life as the grounds leisurely melted into dusk. A warm breeze danced around the room and caressed her hair, as if nothing had happened, just like always. She closed her eyes, letting tears of both grief and relief fall silently for a minute, phantom pains still cutting into her body as she tried to stop herself from twitching uncontrollably. She almost managed to forget her real situation sometimes, here in this perfect paradise. Almost managed to ignore the horrors of what she'd been through, and stop wondering, even if it was just for a few minutes, what might be going on out there in the real world. How her friends were faring, Davian in particular. What had changed? Who lived now and who had died? Whether anybody was left to remember her. The shifts brought it all back. She could handle the physical pain, even if it didn't feel like it at the time, she always knew it was going to end. But what it meant, the reminder, stuck with her for much longer and hurt far worse.
Welcome back.
Asha opened her eyes again, wiping the moisture away and sitting up. Ellie was standing in the doorway. Though her tone was light, even cheerful, her eyes were full of concern.
It was too soon.
Asha's voice was hoarse.
I should have had weeks.
The young woman, she was perhaps 5 years older than Asha herself, nodded, her waist-length, straight black hair swinging with the motion.
Something is wrong, she agreed.
Asha's breath caught at the words.
Do you know what? My best guess is some sort of external disruption.
Though she was undoubtedly perturbed, Ellie's tone was as calm as ever.
Was the shift any different from usual?
No, said Asha automatically. Then she swallowed and held up a hand, forcing herself to think back properly.
The beginning was odd, she conceded. Usually when it happens, the tributary machinery is already in motion. This time it felt like it started as I woke up. Because I woke up. A disruption to the Dokken, then, rather than the tributary itself. The shift mechanism was reacting to your altered state rather than causing it.
Ellie crossed her arms, giving her a mock stern look.
What did you do? Nothing. Nothing,
said Asha quickly, defensive despite herself.
I'd just checked whether the Dokken needed reinforcing, but I've done that plenty of times before. I thought I saw something down near the forest not long before that, but I don't know what it was, if anything. Something just didn't feel right.